In a splendid chamber of the Palais Royal, formerly styled the Palais Cardinal, a man was sitting in deep reverie, his head supported on his hands, leaning over a gilt and inlaid table which was covered with letters and papers. Behind this figure glowed a vast fireplace, alive with leaping flames. Great logs of oak blazed and crackled on the polished brass andirons, whose flicker shone upon the superb habiliments of the lonely tenant of the room, which was lit up grandly by twin candelabra rich with wax lights. Anyone who happened at that moment to contemplate that red simar, the gorgeous robe of office, and the rich lace, or who gazed on that pale brow bent in anxious meditation, might, in the solitude of that apartment, combined with the silence of the antechambers and the measured paces of the guards upon the landing place, have fancied that the shade of Cardinal Richelieu lingered still in his accustomed haunt. It was, alas, the ghost of former greatness. France enfeebled, the authority of her sovereign regarded with contempt, her nobles returning to their former turbulence and insolence, her enemies within her frontiers, all proved the great Richelieu no longer in existence. In truth, that the red simar which occupied the wonted place was his no longer was still more strikingly obvious from the isolation which seemed, as we have observed, more appropriate to a phantom than a living creature, from the corridors deserted by courtiers and courts crowded with guards, from that spirit of bitter ridicule which, arising from the streets below, penetrated through the very casements of the room, which resounded with the murmurs of a whole city leagued against the minister, as well as from the distant and incessant sounds of guns firing, let off happily without other end or aim except to show to the guards, the Swiss troops and the military who surrounded the Palais Royal, that the people were possessed of arms. The shade of Richelieu was Mazarin. Now Mazarin was alone and defenseless, as he well knew. "Foreigner," he exclaimed, "Italian, that is their mean yet mighty byword of reproach, the watchword with which they assassinated, hanged, and made away with Concini. And if I gave them their way, they would assassinate, hang, and make away with me in the same manner, although they have nothing to complain of except a tax or two now and then. Idiots, ignorant of their real enemies, they do not perceive that it is not the Italian who speaks French badly, but those who can say fine things to them in the purest Parisian accent, who are their real foes. Yes, yes," Mazarin continued, whilst his wonted smile, full of subtlety, lent a strange expression to his pale lips. "Yes, these noises prove to me, indeed, that the destiny of favourites is precarious. But ye shall know I am no ordinary favourite, no. The Earl of Essex, 'tis true, wore a splendid ring set with diamonds, given him by his royal mistress, whilst I have nothing but a simple circlet of gold with a cipher on it and a date. But that ring has been blessed in the chapel of the Palais Royal, so they will never ruin me as they long to do. And whilst they shout, 'Down with Mazarin!' I, unknown and unperceived by them, incite them to cry out, 'Long live the Duc de Beaufort,' one day, another, 'Long live the Prince de Conde,' and again, 'Long live the Parliament.'" And at this word, the smile on the cardinal's lips assumed an